Hello, welcome to a Paul Carenza podcast. I'm Paul Carenza, this is a podcast, so this is a Paul Carenza podcast. Really, it's a collection of other podcasts I've done as well. If you go way back, you'll find the Heptagon Club, when I interviewed 7 different guests per episode. That was a little ambitious. We had Comedians with Books, when I interviewed different comedians with books. Did exactly what it said on the tin, really. And now, it's a Paul Carenza podcast, catching up with different people. Some are friends, some are writers, some are comedians, and some are people like Gareth Jones, TV presenter I knew first as Gaz Top on children's TV shows in the 1980s. I interviewed him for my other podcast, The British Broadcasting Century. You may have heard snippets of that conversation there, but I thought, well, we need a home for the full podcast, because it turns out with Gareth Jones, once you get him talking, he doesn't stop easily.
If you've heard the British Broadcasting Century podcast, you'll have heard about half of the following interview with Gareth there, but this is the complete works, with the other never-before-heard chat, the two halves of the interview reunited. It's Gareth. And it's Jones.
For more info on him, you can go to garethjones.tv. He's the host of Gareth Jones on Speed. He is a complete petrol head, a science enthusiast, and a fascinating person to speak to. So ladies and gentlemen, the Welsh Wonder, Gareth Jones.
Delighted to say welcoming to the podcast this week a man I know for various different names. I didn't even know how to introduce him. I'm going to call him Gareth Jones. Hello, Gareth.
That's a pretty good start. That's good start. Always been my name. There was a period in my life where other people called me Gaz Top, and it was them who gave me the name. It's actually Mike Peters from The Alarm, the band I used to roadie for, who gave me the nickname Gaz Top. And Alarm fans used to get The Alarm to sign autographs, and then they'd ask their road crew, and I was an Alarm roadie, to sign, and I'd sign it Gaz Top as a joke, and it kind of stuck. But I've always been Gareth Jones since 1961, but there was a brief period, I suppose, on television between 85 and 89 where I was called Gaz Top, and I had to seek back to Gareth Jones via Gareth Gaz Top Jones.
Nice. I think that's the thing, that I first was aware of your oeuvre, if that's even the right word, as Gaz Top. You know, that's, I remember seeing you on How to Get Fresh, things like this. And what were you doing before then, and what was your entrance to the industry and all that sort of thing?
The whole story was, I was brought up in North Wales, and being a Welsh speaker, a big part of Welsh culture is this thing called the Eisteddfod, which is a sort of a national singing, dancing, reciting poetry competition where everyone is expected to perform. You know, you just are. Everyone performs. It's completely normal. It's an essential part of Welsh culture. So I've always been, you know, capable of standing up and telling a story, reciting a poem, singing a song, as everybody in Wales is. You look at the inordinate number of Welsh people who are in the media, it's because of the Eisteddfod. So I had that as my initial start. Then I went into youth theatre when I was about 13. I was actually allowed in 2 years younger than everyone else was in the theatre group. I went on a drama course, and that sort of bolstered my performance credentials. I had a dad who was an engineer, an electronics engineer, so he filled me full of love and understanding for technology. And then rock and roll happened, you know, Slade in 1972, punk rock in 1976. And I formed a band with some mates, started gigging in North Wales, supporting other bands, and the other bands are better than us. Then one day, one of those other bands said, "Will you come and be a roadie for me?" So I ended up being a roadie for the other bands because I was good with technology, and toured the world with that band, The Alarm, for 5 years, and got offered a TV gig in America in 1984, I suppose that was. Turned it down because I was a roadie, not a TV presenter, and then came back to Britain January 85. The Alarm took 3 months off. I was a roadie looking for work, and I had another job lined up with another band, The Armory Show at the time. But a pal of mine had told me that, and he'd applied for a job with a new satellite and cable music channel called Music Box, who were like MTV, and they were looking for presenters. And he said, you should do this. I mean, this guy, Pete Picton, was in Youth Theatre with me. He was the guy who said, come, let's go join Youth Theatre. And he was also in my band with me. So he's been a massive influence on me. And Pete said, go for this job. And he wrote a phone number down on the back of a pack of Benson and Hedges, 20 gold packet of 20 Bensons. Yeah. And when I was in London one day, I set up the band in rehearsals, phoned this number and said, oh, I believe you're looking for television presenters who know about music. And they said, yeah, come down for an interview. So literally that day, and I do mean literally that day, I went, did an interview, walked into an office full of girls, thought, I was young and single at the time. I quite like this. So I put my feet up on the desk wearing cowboy boots. I remember this well. I said, I like it here. I'd like to come and work here. And she said, well, let's find out if you can, said Jane Kelly, the woman interviewing me. And she gave me an opportunity for a screen test, which I passed. And 3 days later, I had my own TV program presenting music videos on Music Box. So I went from zero to hero in about 3 or 4 days. Ridiculous. So that's how I started in television.
I mean, it's a fast turnover, isn't it? When it happens, it happens. Yeah. You're in. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. That's amazing.
And it was never my plan. It was never my plan. I set out to be either the first Welshman on the moon, and I'm absolutely serious about this, or the bass player in Slade. Those are the two things, Paul, I wanted to be.
There's time yet. There's time yet for the moon stuff, certainly. It could happen. And Slade as well, you know. Why not? You know, dream big. Dream big.
Well, I did get close once. I have actually played briefly with Slade, but not in a professional. Well, a semi-professional capacity. And as far as walking on the moon, there's hope, but it's...
Yeah, you never know. Stranger things have happened. Well, clearly then, this love of technology was there at the start, by the sounds of it, because you've done a lot of shows that I wondered if it sort of, you've gravitated towards tech, science, gaming, speed, of course, your podcast, Gareth Jones on Speed. But from right at the start, by the sounds of it then, that and then children's TV presenting seems to always be an accident along the way that's sort of drawn you to all that stuff.
Yeah, it was exactly that. I think... you know, I grew up in the space age. I was born in 1961, some 6 weeks after the first human left Earth, Yuri Gagarin. And so right throughout my childhood years, the most important thing for me was the moon landing. I watched it, the whole project, unravel in front of me, play out before me, and was passionate about that. Didn't give a frig about football. Forget football, not even rugby, being a Welshman, that was what other people did. I couldn't see the point. But I like technology. I like motorsport. I like the moon landings. My dad was an electronics engineer. He was ex-RAF. We built and flew radio-controlled model aircraft together, and cars and helicopters, in a time when... you built them from plans. You didn't go and buy a fully assembled vehicle. You had to put the whole thing together. I built my first radio when I was 10. Technology was the most important thing to me. And then rock and roll as I became a teenager. And so inevitably I became a roadie. If you put those two things together, it's the very essence. If you like technology and rock and roll, you either become a member of Emerson, Lake and Palmer, or you become a roadie. And, went off around the world and got into music television simply because I had nothing to do for 3 months. And then children's television picked me out. I never set out to find children's television. What happened was when I was on Music Box, which was a pan-European satellite music channel, Janet Street Porter, a great television presenter and producer of the 80s and the 70s. Janet spotted me interviewing Tony James from CC Sputnik. Tony was her boyfriend at the time, and I'm a big Sputnik fan, loved Generation X, that was my era of rock and roll. And she liked the way that I interviewed him, knew about him, and the way that we edited my interview into a CC Sputnik video. Now, in those days, you kind of had videos and you had interviews. No one had sort of done that before. I can't claim the responsibility for that. I was working with a very talented director called Josh Halil. Koskun is his real name. He's Turkish. Josh, we called him. And Josh and I had this idea because the Sputnik's video, you couldn't tell what was like a movie trailer, what was a music video, what was the interview. We meshed the whole thing together, and Janet kind of liked that. So she tracked me down. She found me at Music Box. I got a message at Music Box one day. Oh, can you go and see Janet Street Porter? She's casting for a new Saturday morning children's program. What? Wait. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Really out of the blue. Mm. So I went to meet who I thought I was expecting to meet, Janet Street Porter, and met the guy she was co-producing this series with. The show was turned out to be Get Fresh. And the guy that she was working with, Tim Edmonds, was the first man I ever discussed television with. At Music Box, I'd always discussed music. That was, it was like running a radio station, like running Radio One. Music was the most important thing. But I had this chat with this guy called Tim. We talked about television for the first time ever, and I learned a huge amount from him and realized I was actually interested in the process of making television. Janet Street Porter walked in, asked me, okay, when are you on Music Box? Well, it's a 24-hour channel. I could be on any time. Would you be on Saturday mornings if we gave you a job on this program? So, well, I could probably ask them to not have me on at the same time as I would be on this show. All right, then, give them a screen test, Tim. And that was it. I was sent off to Newcastle with 8 other people, I think, to do screen tests as possible presenters for Get Fresh, and I got chosen for Get Fresh, yay, and became a Saturday morning TV presenter, not because I knew about music, knew about television. I think I got it because I used to be a roadie, and roadies have this brilliant, the show must go on attitude. You know, you arrive in a town at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the band are on stage at what, 9 o'clock at night, you've got 5 hours to make everything work. And even if things aren't working, you make them work. You know, I've built drum risers out of old ashtrays when there wasn't a drum riser. You know, I've made cables up by wiring short cables together so we could do this gig. And a TV presenter of a live show, and this gig that I got, Get Fresh, was a live Saturday morning show, required that kind of the show must go on attitude. And I think that was my qualification for getting Get Fresh. And then the reason I got How was it was the same producer. The producer of the first series of Get Fresh, Tim Edmonds, worked with Janet Street Porter, was then asked to put How 2 together. And Tim knew my background in science and engineering and technology and thought, actually, he might be quite useful for How 2. But by the time I did How 2, I was no longer Gaz Top. I was Gareth Jones again. I never appeared as Gaz Top on How 2, which is curious because a lot of people say, oh, Gaz Top from How 2. No, never happened.
It's because they're all really short, easy names and titles. Gaz Top, How To. You can say it so quickly. It's
It's
easy to remember, you know, but yeah. Even if it's wrong.
Well, the best thing that ever happened to me on Get Fresh was Gilbert the Alien, who joined us on the second season. Because I noticed that suddenly Get Fresh went from the first year of being pretty good. The second year, I stepped outside of the door of my house and people would stop me on the street and say, hi, Gaz, where's Gilbert? Wow, things have changed. People know my name and they know the name of the puppet I was working with. And Get Fresh exploded. We had something like 6 million viewers on a Saturday morning. It was massive, but there wasn't much in the way of rivalry in those days. There were only a few cable and satellite channels, so it was a very different environment.
And that was, from memory, that was all over the country as well, wasn't it? You would different locations each week.
Not only a different location, but an entirely different ITV company making the show every week. It was organised by Tyne Tees Television, who had a central unit in London, a sort of a core unit. So there would be a producer, a talent booker, a couple of researchers and the presenters. And then we would travel to a location, let's say Carlisle, and this week we arrive on the Thursday and it would be Border Television's turn to make our program. So they turn up with their own OB unit. They'd have the spaceship, the Millennium Dustbin, this portable studio that was delivered. It was basically a 40-foot articulated lorry trailer. You'd have to assemble it kind of like a transformer. All the bits on the inside would be taken out and put on the outside to make it look like a truck. And they'd have to follow instructions on how to do this. And it was very difficult. You know, it was only just made it by Saturday morning. And then next week it would be, I don't know, TSW's turn to make it, or Scottish, or Grampian, or Ulster, or HTV West, or HTV Wales, or TVS, or TSW. You know, Anglia. We went round all the little companies, none of the big five. So it wasn't Granada, it wasn't London Weekend, it wasn't Thames, it wasn't Central, and it wasn't Yorkshire Television, the big five in those days. It was all the little regions who clubbed together to pitch for the Saturday morning franchise, because the big five either couldn't do it, didn't want to do it, had failed to do it successfully in the past. There'd been a number of failed Saturday morning shows before Get Fresh emerged. I think the most famous of which was The Mersey Pirate, which was made by Granada Television in Liverpool, presented by Billy Butler, MBE, Butler's eldest. Yeah. And there were other shows like the Saturday Banana, and none of these had really done well, and they'd all thought, we can't make Saturday morning television. So they gave up and said to the little regionals, do you want to have a go? So they said, well, let's make something that we can all have a go at doing and sharing it between us. So it's kind of an almost neo-communist, semi-socialist conglomerate of people making Get Fresh, which was fantastic. It was a joy to be involved.
That sounds a mix of, I don't know about anarchic as such, but yeah, anti-something. It's anti-the mainstream in a way, isn't it?
It was, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It was, we'll do our thing. We don't care what we haven't been given a brief. We've been given an opportunity. And so Get Fresh wrote itself. It was Janet and Tim's vision. And it was kind of, it really coalesced beautifully in the second season when the Vicious Boys, who'd been part of the presenting team on the first season, had left. By the second season, we had a new producer, Mike Forte, and he said to me, what should we do? I said, well, it's a spaceship. We should have an alien on board. Oh, yeah, let's have an alien, he said. So he commissioned Fluck and Law, the people who made the puppets for Spitting Image, to build a puppet. We didn't have a name for it. It was made classic children's TV cost cutting. This puppet was made of used spare bits of other puppet molds in Spitting Image.
Wow.
The lips, Gilbert's lips, were Ringo Starr. I can't remember what the other bits were, but I do remember that the body was a germ. They created a germ, a kind of a virus, but that was Janet Street Porter. That was how they did Janet Street Porter on Spitting Image. And it was a tremendous irony that it was this same body became the body of Gilbert for Get Fresh, a series produced by Janet Street Porter, absolutely intentionally. Fluck and Law knew what they were doing. So Gilbert was a bitter, an amalgam of bits, and his personality grew out of the performance that Phil Cornwell did as Gilbert's voice. Gilbert was two people. There was a puppeteer and a separate voice artist. And that's what gave Gilbert this kind of out of control, split personality kind of essence, I suppose.
I imagine that a show like that must have been as full on as broadcasting sort of gets, you know, as opposed to in a studio and so on. Was it fun, or was it mad, or was it somewhat, did you not have the time to stop and think whether it was fun or mad?
All three of those things. Exactly, all three of those things. It was really intense. We'd arrive Thursday afternoon, we'd walk around this enormous location setting. We'd be struggling with little ITV companies trying to make the technology work. Some of them didn't even have an outside broadcast scanner. Some had a porta cabin and two-inch VT machines that they'd brought from their headquarters, their broadcast suite at home, in their edit suites. And sorry, not 2-inch, 1-inch. That was an exaggeration. You know, not even beta cam. These are 1-inch reel-to-reel tape machines. And we had talkback systems, which barely ever worked. We had, you know, receivers, radio receivers, the size of a flipping suitcase. I'm looking for something around me, a shoebox that I would have strapped to my back, you know, because they didn't have little micron radio transmitter receivers. And they would break up all the time. We could never work out whether I could have switch talkback or open talkback. So I just had open talkback, this constant conversation in my ear of four people constantly whilst I was broadcasting, and Gilbert in the other ear and trying to make sense of what I'm saying. So it was chaos from the Thursday. And then we went live, you know, we had a long day's rehearsals on Friday with half the guests never managing to get there. So you'd have to imagine what might happen. And you go live Saturday morning. Of course it was raining. Of course, two of the five cameras had broken down. And it was make it up as you go along a lot of the time. You watch back any episodes of Get Fresh, and there are some episodes available on YouTube, and my website is, I've actually got the entire last episode ever of Get Fresh, August 1988. You can watch that on my website. You look, things break down even on the last show. It's raining even on the last show. It's chaos. And that was the joy of it. It was like rock and roll for me. It wasn't alien, pun intended, in any way. You know, it felt like the chaos of rock and roll, and I thrived on that. When things went wrong, cut to Gaz, and I'd have to do something. And I'm brilliant. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm more than happy. As you can tell, I can talk.
You're quite right too. Well, you're clearly, for someone who didn't think they'd go into TV broadcasting or anything or presenting, you're clearly made for it, you know. So.
Well, it's genetic. It really is. My mother, we had an expression in our family. My mother wasn't backward in coming forward. You know, she really wasn't shy. She knew no shyness. And my dad was a brilliantly applied man. He could, you know, a self-taught electronics engineer. He could teach himself anything. He had the great ability to disassemble something and put it back together and make it work and understand how it worked and make it work better. So I inherited most of those qualities from those two people. And thank you. That was the perfect, you know, parts kit for a live TV presenter who could do science television. Thank you very much. So I claim no involvement in that whatsoever. I was handed those genes from my parents. My family rode the wave of the transistor, basically the invention of the transistor, the transition from valves to transistors. Suddenly portable radios and televisions became much more affordable, and so, you know, that was the technology boom that led to a revenue stream that dragged my family from being a working class family to being a middle class family in the 1960s. Uh-huh. And so we had a TV. We had the first color TV in our street because Dad sold them. So in the 60s, well, the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, Dad would bring a color TV home from the shop to borrow for the weekend. And everyone on our street would come and watch the color TV in our house. I remember a football match, the FA Cup final being rerun on a midweek thing. And our house was full of people watching, I think, Chelsea and Leeds play in color in our house. And of course, the reason I watched the moon landing live was we had a TV, you know, in the late 60s. And it was an essential, the TV was always on. In fact, in our house, my sister came here to visit me a few years ago and walked in. She said to me, "Is there a reason the television's off?" And I found that, I hadn't thought like that, but the TV was always on in our house. And for her to notice that it was off was, it said a great deal about the culture that we grew up in together.
Well, actually, it's similar. My parents' house, they still to this day, they'll have generally like BBC One on in one room, then a different TV in the other room has got ITV on, and maybe a third in the kitchen's got two or Channel 4. And if you want to switch channels, you don't change your remote. You just go to a different room.
To another room. Yeah. And that's not weird. That's pretty much how I lived my life throughout the sort of the 80s and the 90s. And it changed when the kids turned up and Violet and I got together. But I mean, that isn't weird to me. Yeah. That's completely the culture I grew up in.
But also the future there, as you got into the noughties and you seem to have got into podcasting Ahead of most, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, yeah, early adopter, pioneer.
Quite right, too.
Only realised fairly recently I was a genuine podcast pioneer. And again, I can claim very little responsibility for that. It was my great ally, Zog, a journalist, a magazine editor called Paul Ireson. That's his real name, but we've always called him Zog. In 2005, when my 16-year tenure on How To had ended, I was casting around for what to do next. I was doing some motorsport television at the time, but Zog was doing a podcast about poker at the time called the Poker Diagram Podcast. And he came here, this room I'm in right now, one day and said to me, "You've got to make a podcast. You should call it Gareth Jones on Speed, and it should be about cars." And my partner, Violet, said, "Great, do that. Do it. Podcasting is the new thing." "Great." I said, "What's a podcast?" Really didn't know in 2005. So we started making content. We made a couple of programs, worked out how to write an RSS feed and how to upload programs to my web server. And I think the first show got something like 300 listeners, and then the subscriber base built and built and built until, you know, we had something like 50,000 a few years ago, which was a huge number. So yeah, in the very first days of podcasting, it was very different to how it is now. You know, we had to work out, what is an RSS feed? Oh my God, I've got to learn XML and write it manually. Mm-hmm. Oh, what's the audio standard? Oh God, who are the people distributing podcasts? Oh, and now I've got to be a podcaster. You know, you hit record on your Zoom button, you have a plugin on WordPress, you hit publish, and you're a podcaster in two stages. It reminded me, the early days of podcasting is the early days of radio control model aircraft. You know, it was a very similar process of having to work it out from first principles. There was not a kit of parts available then. And I've kept it going. Violet will tell you that one thing I'm very good at is sort of loyalty and sustaining and just keeping something going. You know, I did for 16 years. Gareth Jones on Speed, my car podcast, I've now done for 15 years. You know, I tend to stay with things until other people are fed up of them, not me.
Very good. So it's nearly overtaken How To then, by another year or so. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah, another year and it will have matched How To. That's correct.
Good work. Well, so 15 years of that is incredible work. And over your entire career, clearly as well, you've zoomed in on a thing that you are great at and you love, and the technology and the science and stuff. Yeah, it's great how that sort of has come together, and it means you can still talk for 15 years about it, because 15 more potentially, you know.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. I'm not done with Gareth Jones on Speed. You know, I do other things as well. I make radio documentaries. I'm actually, the whole reason I can make radio documentaries is because I've been a podcaster for 15 years. I taught myself the process of editing audio, mixing audio, creating soundscapes, telling stories with an audio cues to reinforce what you're talking about. So podcasting has opened up this whole other world for me. My production company, Whiz Bang, we make radio documentaries for Radio Wales and Radio Cymru in English and in Welsh. Even though I live in Wales, I've still got my heart. Sorry, even though I live in London, my heart is in Wales still. And a great deal of that which influences me comes from Wales. You know, they say write about what you know, write about what you care about, and I care and know about Wales, so I make programs about Wales for Wales. But with the added benefit perhaps of having a third party view, I don't live in Wales, so when I go to Wales I notice the changes. When I watch Wales on TV here in London or listen to it on the radio, I hear it in a different context to people who live in Wales. So I hopefully bring a view to Welsh broadcasting that people who live and work there don't have, perhaps.
I assumed you were in Wales because I was fooled by the green screen and there's the rolling fields and hills behind you, and it turns out it's all a con. Look at
it. It is all a con. Yeah, I've actually got a green screen backdrop of Nant Peris behind me, which is one of my favourite parts in Wales. And yeah, it is a con. You know, Gareth Jones, Gaz Top was the English con, Gareth Jones is a Welsh one.
That'll do. That's the way to do it.
Part of the reason for changing back, there were two reasons for changing back from Gareth Jones, from Gareth Top to Gareth Jones, was that I wanted people to know I'm a Welshman and to know that I'm a Welsh speaker, and the clue's in the name, Gareth Jones. Because I don't particularly sound Welsh because of the part of Wales I'm from, and the fact that my dad was brought up in Yorkshire means I don't particularly have a Welsh accent. And a lot of people thought I was a Brummie. A lot of people thought I was from Staffordshire. I'd sound like this. And I wanted people to know I'm a Welshman. So that was one of the main reasons. Plus, I also wanted to present Tomorrow's World. And I figured that Gaz Top was never going to be a Tomorrow's World presenter, but someone called Gareth Jones might get that gig. So that's why I switched.
Very good.
But I did actually end up presenting Tomorrow's World very briefly. I presented the last series, which is great.
The last series, in fact. There you go. So that was
Tomorrow's World.
You did that. Okay, that's good to know. Good to know who to hold responsible.
That's not quite true. I did know it was the last series when I was contracted to do it, and it was just sort of a final fling. I had fun. Yeah, I had fun. I cried on the day that I got given that job. I broke my heart because all my presenter heroes were Tomorrow's World presenters. William Woolard, James Burke, Raymond Baxter. These are the people who I copied when I became a TV presenter. I intoned like William Woolard. I thought like Raymond Baxter. You know, those are my models. You know, when Bob Dylan became a musician, he just copied Pete Seeger. When Bruce Springsteen became a performer, he copied Bob Dylan. When Bono became a singer, he copied Mark Bolan and David Bowie. And when I became a television presenter, I copied William Woolard and Raymond Baxter and James Burke, my heroes. So I have a lot to thank them for. So to finally become a presenter of their show some 30 years later, perhaps. Wow. A great moment for me. Heartbreakingly happy.
I was going to ask you your, almost lastly, because we've got to wrap up, but your inspirations, and clearly those guys did it for you in terms of what you watched and absorbed growing up.
Yeah, in terms of television, Tomorrow's World. Also Top of the Pops, and Magpie more than Blue Peter, although I have to give a nod to John Noakes on Blue Peter, who is just a model for all of us, not just people who became television presenters, but we all wanted to be John Noakes in the 60s. Thunderbirds, massive influence on me. You know, you look at all my school books, they're full of drawings of vehicles I've invented inspired by Thunderbirds. And so Gerry Anderson, who was the visionary who put Thunderbirds together, and Derek Meddings, the guy who designed the vehicles, those people were big influences on me. Outside of television, other big influences, Noddy Holder from Slade. It's one of the reasons I probably don't sound like a North Walian. I hear Nod's voice in my head, being a big Slade fan from 10 years old, and I may have subconsciously adopted some of his tones. Bono from U2. I toured as a roadie for 5 years with The Alarm, and for a year and a half of that, we supported U2 in Europe and in America. I ended up working for U2. I know U2. They were my mates when I was 20. And watching those lads, you know, my generation, if you like, went from being soft lads to being international celebrities, and watching how they handled that was a big influence on me. Same for Mike Peters from The Alarm, watching my best mate become a superstar. It gave me a model of how to handle if a similar thing happened to me. I never quite reached the heights of The Alarm or U2, but having, you know, a television series of my own for 16 years on How To, 3 years on Get Fresh, and lots of other things as well, certainly gives you you get an idea of what it must be like to be a real famous person. I've never been famous, familiar, but never famous.
And I love the way you're talking about How To there, and
how to handle the, there you go, you even crowbar
How To into How To. That's my,
I didn't realize that. That's it. Yeah, and then we get How Brain. You know, you work on a program for 16 years And it changes the way you think. You know, if you speak two languages, your brain remaps. It physically changes. And if you spend 16 years looking at solutions and understanding things in a certain way, it will physically change the shape of your brain. And I think 16 years of how to change the shape of my brain, it's like doing a postgraduate degree in trivia, perhaps.
Maybe so, yeah. Well, thank you so much. You've been so generous with your time and your website, GarethJones.tv, that you mentioned we could find the other clips there, and your podcast, Gareth Jones on Speed. Everyone should listen to that if they don't listen already, but clearly everybody does. So,
Well, we've got a reasonable audience. And one other thing, if you want to see any of the video of the stuff I've made over the years, you can go to my YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/GarethJonesTV. But thank you, Paul, for the opportunity. Thank you for the great plug. You're a kind and generous man. Good luck with the show.
Ah, thank you, Gareth. That was Gareth Jones. You can find out more about him at GarethJones.tv. That's his website where you can find about Gareth Jones on Speed, his podcast that's been going on for a very long time indeed. And on Twitter, he's at Gareth Jones TV. He was a delight to chat to. Next time on a Paul Carenza podcast, Reverend John March, a good friend of mine from my university days, who now runs a church in North London. And he'll be telling us about, well, really how church comes back from something like, a pandemic, I suppose. Meantime, if you like this podcast, do review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you found it. And you can give my other podcast a go. It's called The British Broadcasting Century. And there you'll find guests like, well, Gareth Jones, for example, but in more bite-sized form. We save the long chats for here on a Paul Carenza podcast. Till next time, farewell.